Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by the Reverb.com Black Friday sale. Reverb is the world's biggest marketplace for used, new, vintage, and boutique music gear. And whether you're looking for your next guitar, amp, or pedal, you'll find what you want from sellers all around the world. And to make this Black Friday even more musical, we've teamed up with Reverb to offer an exclusive discount of €15, valid on your first order with Reverb.com. Head to guitarnerds.net/Black Friday to claim your discount and save big in the Reverb Black Friday sale. That link again is guitarnerds.net/Black Friday. Welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Matt Knight.
Hello there.
Yes, and this week we've got tons of news after what was last week a relatively light week for new releases. It seems like everyone is putting something out now in anticipation of the NAMM to come, but we've also had a very busy time as well. Matt, you've been getting a ton of new pedals again.
Yes.
Matt,
yes.
Hang on. You weren't here last week.
No, Matt had a week off. It was so nice.
You haven't filled out your return to work yet, so we actually don't know whether you can be paid for this month. You know, as well, you know, Guitar Nerds has a strict absentee policy, whereas if you miss out, then you don't get paid that big salary that you get paid. So
I prefer to pay myself, you know, the classic like Silicon Valley salary, which is $1 a year, and then take it all out in dividends, which equals zero.
Yes. Well, yeah, seeing as everything else equals zero, it sounds like we're probably all in the, it comes out in the wash, I guess.
Yeah. Happy days.
So, Matt, you've been collecting pedals, which is something that you want to do.
Yeah.
So you've rebought something that I'm pretty sure you've bought and sold maybe 5 times.
No, I bought it once and sold it once. The Montreal Assembly Count 5. Someone I'm friends with on Facebook, it like popped up on Facebook. Such and such has like added some stuff to UK Guitar Exchange. Clicked on it, it was like Montreal Assembly Count 5, and I was like, I'm just going to buy that.
Okay, and so I just sent him a text message. Why did you get rid of it the first time?
Well, the first time I was like, I think I sold it for something else. I think I was just like, I want to buy X, and I can't even remember what that was. And I was like, well, something's got to go. And I was like, oh, I'll just get rid of that. I'm sure I can buy another one. And then obviously, because I think when I bought it, it was the first time we talked about it on the podcast, which is probably maybe 2 years ago.
And we should talk about it again for
the
listeners.
And the rest, mate. So, I think we were still podcasting in Mark's living room.
I am sure that it was once included in the Gear of the Year.
Maybe.
The GOTY.
We'll have to have a look. But for those of you who don't know, it is a... Oh, how would you describe it? A wacky delay pedal is the simplest
pedal that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's... and actually, I've noticed now that I've been playing around with this, a lot of pedals that have like... spawned because I think of the Count to Five's existence. But anyway, so after I bought and sold that one, I think I put a pre-order down the first time it came up in like the news when we talked about it. And then I got an email like a month later being like, oh, it's ready. And I'd pay the deposit. Now they don't do that. They literally say, it's ready. Go buy it. You have to go and buy it from the website right now. And they sell out like instantly.
Yeah, so when of course, because they make them in such small batches. Well, it's just one fella, isn't it?
I think it's just one dude. So I was like, right, I'm going to buy the secondhand one. So the first reason was, I'm pretty sure I'm never going to lose money on it because I paid the same price for it secondhand that you pay for them new.
I mean, that's probably just you not being very good at getting a deal.
Potentially, but then if you look at the used prices, they're just silly.
Like, and what finish did you get this new one?
It's just blue. I think it's the only one they do is just like a blue finish.
They've done several colours.
No, I don't think so. No? Only the blue. They've got loads of new pedals, but they've got loads of other pedals that are in different colours, but this one is just blue.
I think I might have just seen, I think that what's his name, that magpie guy on YouTube has one refinished.
I think
in pink.
He might have sprayed it a funky colour.
And I think that's why.
But the other pedal they make, which is the 856 Vizelasan, which is the like their expanded version of this, like new, it's impossible to get hold of. They're like $400 and they go up on like eBay and Reverb for like almost double that, like straight away.
Can you explain the nature of the controls?
Yeah,
for listeners who won't
basically
be aware.
It's a delay. It's a delay pedal first and foremost, and it's got a buffer in it, a small chip which works like a delay pedal. You play into it, and it saves that sound and plays it back. So in the simplest mode, you've got delay time. Or length, it's called. So that's how long the buffer is, so how long it records, effectively. How many times that then repeats, so goes through the playback head, effectively. And then it's got direction, so you can direct the delay repeats, and then you can... But you're not just doing forward or back, you're actually doing it forward or reverse in quantized steps of harmony, or no harmony if you want. So you can do... like a chromatic, you can tune it chromatically down in reverse or up. But then you can do things like diminished repeats where it will feed the repeat back into the delay and then that will pitch off a different note. So it then creates like a scale as it goes up, almost similar to how an earthquake or rainbow machine sounds. And that's not even the craziest mode because there's a second mode that you can loop in for 4 seconds and then one controls the direction as the first mode. The second one controls at what point in the 4 second loop it might randomly start, and then you can control how randomly that action takes place. So you can basically
how random it is.
There's a control that basically is just called random. So actually, that second mode, sorry, you loop in for 4 seconds, you choose the direction, you then choose how long of that 4 seconds you want the sample to be, either, you know, 100% or zero, I guess. And then the more you turn up the randomizer, the more it will start at a random point within that 4 second sample.
So right. The more often it will start randomly than where should be placed.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last mode is an 8 second sampler that you can loop over 3 times, and each loop can then go in a different chromatical direction, forward or backwards, which is pretty nuts. So you can do 3 layers of the same thing if you wanted, but they could all go in. One could be normal, one could be forward, one could be reverse, and then you could tune the repeats into each other if you wanted to do that.
I mean, it's absolutely brilliant. It's completely bonkers, and it's one of those pedals that I'm not sure has any real practical application in anything that's not being done by Nick Reinhardt.
The funny thing is, actually, if you put it at the end of your signal chain, it's just kind of a nice thing to like make some twittery sounds or like make something a bit odd. The real magic comes if you put it at the beginning of your signal chain and loop everything dry into it and then run all your pedals after it. So it actually works better before any delays, reverbs or modulations, because then you've got a small looper that's doing a bunch of random stuff that you can then
manipulate afterwards.
So it works really well for that. And
amazing.
It's just totally random, and I like the fact that you can just literally like twiddle some controls and it does something different It's one of those pedals that you find a setting. Once you found a setting, you will never find it again. That's it. It will just be lost forever. So that's been, it's been really good fun. So I just knew that if I didn't get one again now and hold on to it, I'd regret it, because I'm sure they're going to be worth a bunch of money someday. Yeah.
Do you think you're going to add it to your board?
I have already. I've actually built two boards. I've got a big board and I've built a little small board now. And
what are the boards?
So I'm using a... What make are they? Or yeah. So I'm using the Waji pedal board, which was the medium-sized one, which we talked about at Summer NAMM. And I'm using a custom pedal board's ES8 medium, which has got space for an ES8 plus like an expression pedal or a wah pedal. But the mini board I just put together is really nice. It's got Deluxe Memory Man on it, DD5, Ibanez PM7
only
phase
one,
modulator.
Only one Deluxe Memory Man on it.
Only one, yeah. I couldn't fit two on there. But then I thought, maybe I'll just build a rack system and then I'll put it in there and then I'll run that into the RE201. And yeah, then I just realised that that would just be awesome. So I'm going to make that happen.
And this week you also got two other pedals, way more conventional than the Count to Five. Both drives, both signature drives.
Yes.
Sort of.
Yeah, sort of. I got a Keeley D&M drive, the Dan and Mick drive from that pedal show.
Finally. We're pretty late on the hype on this one.
Yeah, which is always nice. You were at the second wave now. We can start the second wave of hype. It's a wicked pedal. It's basically a Klon on one side and a King of Tone Marshall Bluesbreaker thing on the other side. You can run one into the other, so you can run drive into boost or boost into drive. Standard in out, you know, so you can just go guitar in and then out to your amp. What I really like is if you use it with a switching system and you use two TRS cables, you can run each side in its own loop, for example, on an ES8, and then like totally split them apart. If you wanted
really?
To.
Really? I didn't know that. That is cool.
Yeah, which is really cool. So in a loop system, it actually works like two individual drive pedals, which is, I think, is a wicked idea. Because then you might find you want to, like, I don't know, put a phaser between the boost and the drive, for example, or you might want to put a delay before it or something. So
that is cool. They are kind of the price of buying two separate drive pedals, however.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, they're like 200 and, I think it's like 230.
Yeah, 230, 40, something like that.
But designed by Keeley in association with Mick and Dan. So they've kind of picked their favourite drive sounds and then built it on a platform that works. So they really like pair well together. And
sorry, can you take a step back a sec? Maybe I missed what you were saying because I was looking it up. How do you run the two separately through a switcher?
Right, so you buy a TRS to dual mono cable, which is basically like a stereo plug, but instead of the other end being a stereo plug, it's two mono.
Right,
mono plugs.
Okay, so you come out of the pedal with the TRS to two mono.
Yeah, from each output jack. And then that becomes their own individual pedals. So
right,
what would be the input? You'd go TRS to dual mono into, say, loop one of an ES8. And then out of the drive side, what would normally be the output? You'd go TRS to dual mono. And
oh,
then
so
that's
you've got
its
go...
own pedal. So you need two TRS to dual mono cables.
Yeah, okay.
And you're effectively splitting it into two separate pedals.
Yeah, okay.
And then you can use a loop switcher change the order if you wanted, like on the fly, because you might find that you want drive into boost and sometimes you want it the other way around, or you want to put a pedal in between, or you want to run them into two different amps, for example, you know. So that I thought that's a really cool little feature. And it's actually a feature taken from the Analog Man King of Tone. It's a mod you can have done when you order your King of Tone and you go on the whatever it is 4-year waiting list. You can actually have that done. It's called the 4-jack method or something like that. And it's a little switch they build in. But it's nice just as a standalone pedal. But if you're using a loop switcher, that's a wicked addition, I think.
Yeah, that's super cool.
And it also saves space on your board, because if you cover the boost side and the drive side, And that only takes the space of one pedal. You've got space on there for something else.
Come on, Matt, who are you kidding?
It's all about that pedal board real estate. And you got another drive. This one we're a little bit hotter off the press, as it's slightly more contemporary.
Yes, yeah. So Adrian, massive thanks to Adrian Thorpe. We were talking and I went out and bought a Dane. Obviously, we've known Pete Honore for a long time, before the Antons days, and he used to be a demo guy for Westside. And I heard this pedal a little while back. He was demoing it, and then we talked about it at the guitar show that we went to a few weeks ago. And I've got to say, and I'm going to say this now, there's two sides. So it's a dual pedal. It's a drive side and a boost side.
I wonder where they got that idea from.
Yeah. The boost side is the best Make Gooderer I've heard in a very, very long time.
Wow.
So the boost side is a boost, a volume boost, a very, very loud volume boost. And
really?
A load
control. So the
boost
side is a volume boost.
Yeah, not like a gain boost. It's just purely clean volume. But it's got a lows control. But what's wicked is you can turn the boost to zero and just use the lows to give you this like huge bloom of like low end. And it just like it fills out your sound massively. And it's one of those things you just, like say, you turn it off and you're like, oh, it's like just a really focused EQ.
So that's something similar to what we were finding with the, as we've mentioned loads of times on the podcast, the ground controlled audio Amaterasu.
Yes. Yeah. Basically, you turn it all the way off and then it just sounds, it still sounds wicked. Yeah. So that then into the drive, which is, I think, originally based off the Peacekeeper that he did with a bunch of extra tweaks, and it's just really, really touch sensitive. It's in the smaller enclosure. Obviously, it's a little bit wider because it's two switches, but it's purple. It looks wicked. And it's just a great, like, cleanish, bluesy overdrive, but it's that boost side that's amazing. And I was like, I said to Adrian, I was like, got to make that boost side a single, like, pedal on its own. I reckon just that bottom end control, even no boost, just adding that bottom end into like a clean amp, it's wicked. Especially with something like a Strat or a Tele, where you know you might have a bridge pickup that's particularly like sharp on the top end, you potentially can't dial in any more bottom end on your amp. It's great for that.
See, I'm really into this smaller chassis for the Thorpe pedals, because it just makes it a touch more convenient for pedal boards, and I'm all about that.
I actually think they look nicer in the smaller enclosure.
Stubby enclosures.
Just slightly stubby, but they just look solid. And I just think it's a great pedal. I think everything he's doing at the moment is wicked. Really well built, original design, looks cool, you know. So good on him for that. I think it's a really, really nice pedal.
Wicked. Well, that's a ton more additions to the Matt Knight pedal collection.
Yeah, I should probably do a rig rundown at some point.
You really should. You should let us know what you've got in your arsenal of effects now. You should upload some pictures of those boards as well.
Yeah.
Pedal board showcase.
Yeah.
Not rig rundown.
Pedal board showcase. What was more interesting the other day was when I just pulled out all the spares that I've got, because I was like, oh, I don't have that many spare pedals. They're all on my board. And I'm like, oh no. I just forgot that I had that case full of Dan Electro mini pedals. I was like, oh, it was like Christmas all at once. I just opened this flight case. I'm like, there's 25 Dan Electro pedals in it. And I was like, I should probably plug some of these in. Again, it was just like, I wish I had a Dan Electro board, you know, like the Boss BCB60, but like a bigger version of the Dan Electro one they made, so I can just put them all in.
You've
one
got one of those Dan Electro boards,
yeah,
so.
But it only holds five pedals, and I want one that holds the entire range.
Can't you just buy four more of those pedal boards?
They're actually incredibly difficult to find, because they were made out of really terrible cheap plastic. I think they just broke.
I'm sure someone with your internet prowess, Matt, can find four more. Maybe we should make that maybe we should try and do that and make a super board out of five, all sort of bolted together.
Yeah, Maybe. The other thing I was thinking was, I did actually see, because they obviously had the bigger than electro pedals, someone a while ago was selling the store demo board they made for the bigger ones, like the Cool Cat Chorus and the Dan Echo and the Daddy-O Overdrive.
I love the Dan Echo.
And it was so much, they wanted so much money for it. I was like, that's just totally unreal. I see that all the time on things like eBay. It's like, complete pedal board. For a while on eBay, there was one guy trying to sell a like his replicated version of a Tom Morello pedal board. And he wanted like 1,500 quid for it. And I was like, mate, what? Those pedals combined separately on second hand are nowhere near 1,500 quid.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah. But I definitely think we did obviously do a whole This Is All the Food series thing. But I need to revisit those because there's some real
gems classic in there. Pedals on there. Jay Cross, you've been putting on punk rock shows this week.
Just the one. I put on a increasingly rare nowadays, me putting on shows just because work's so busy. But yeah, I put on a gig for a friend's band from Philadelphia, this band Hurry, who are great. I really like Matt from that band used to play in this band called Everyone Everywhere, who are just one of my favorite bands of all time. And it was really fun. It was Hurry and this band Happy Accidents from London, who we've talked about on the podcast before. Really cool, simple setup, just nice, easy indie rock, indie punk. It was great. Obviously, lots of Fender. I think, in fact, all the guitars in all three bands were all Fender. It was just great. It was just a really nice and easy show. If they were all like that, I'd do it all the time. But they're not all like that. They're usually really stressful.
Hurry from the States?
Yeah, Hurry from Philadelphia.
What amps did they bring across?
They didn't bring anything. No. So they were on tour with this band, Happy Accidents from London.
And they
just used all their stuff. Yeah. Of course, you remember, Joe, that in the punk rock, as opposed to the math rock scene, it's more about the songs than the equipment that's being used, so you can kind of interchange as long as you know how to play the songs.
Absolutely. In most genres where literally every band sounds exactly the same, it doesn't really matter if you share equipment.
Yeah. You know, listenable music is generally reliant on emotion and harmony rather than disdain and arrogance.
Of course. Well, actually, yes.
Speaking of disdain and arrogance,
I was going to say speaking of emotion. Yes, I have had a very emotional week. I am actually, I am fresh back from tour. Fresh is a terrible choice of words because I am completely the opposite. This week, I have completed a tour and moved house, and of course, as we're recording this, it is the countdown at the moment to the pending Black Friday, which occurs at the end of every November since we in the UK have adopted this American tradition. And that means that I'm exhausted at work. I have been moving sofas and mattresses, which is physical labor, which I am not a fan of. So I've been on tour. I went on tour this week with And So I Watch You From Afar, who are in the very small niche scene of instrumental math rock. They are one of the most important, one of the biggest bands in that genre. So it was an absolute honor to get selected to support them on just a few UK dates that they were having at the just to finish off the year. So we played in a few weird places. Like, well, I say weird places, I just mean unusual places. There's a normal route to these things for such niche scenes, you know, where towns where instrumental math rock music is popular. And this was unusual because I think we did finish in Brighton, but we played in Aldershot.
Yeah.
Of all places. We played in Leicester and I can't remember where the other one was.
Oh, that's good.
It doesn't matter. It's somewhere. But yeah, we played a few sort of weird niche towns. It was great to play with them. They have an excellent range of gear. Orange endorsees, one and all. And they have two guitarists and a bass. Bass players using an Orange 810 and an AD200. Classic setup. Going into a Kind of a customized, a couple of basses, but like a jazz bass or a sort of customized jazz bass with like a big Music Man humbucker. Bass is pretty simple as far as effects go, kind of just a few choice drives. But other than the AD200 200 watt head, both guitarists use Thunderverb 200s.
Okay, right, wow.
So, yeah, and I went over to have a look because they're quite loud. I went over to have a look and they both run them completely dimed.
Wow.
Does that what does that mean?
On 10. Full volume. They run them at 10. Yeah. Well, actually, here's the thing. So they do run them at 10, but the Thunderverbs have a built-in attenuator, I believe.
Okay.
Where you can sort of... So they're having the effect, the impact of that full whopping 200 watts from both amps. But both of those running into 412s. And yeah, they're crazy. Actually, one I think blew up halfway through. And Niall, one of the guitarists, had to make a quick stop off at Orange HQ and get another Thunderverb 200, which was very lucky that they had one because they don't make that amplifier.
No, I was actually just looking. I was just confirming the attenuator because I'm guessing the attenuator comes like post power amp. So basically you're driving the power amp valves at like maxed out. So you're basically getting the valves working as hard as possible and then you're just like choking the output stage into the speakers. And obviously the longer you do that, the harder you wear the valves and the quicker things might die, I guess.
Yes, I imagine they have quite regular amp servicing going on with such a full-on rig. But both guitarists also use Pedal Train Pros, which are absolutely filled. Now, what was interesting when I sort of met the band and were talking to them is none of them use switcher systems. And actually, sort of in talking to him about that, was funny because I realized that when I started playing in this genre, we didn't use switcher systems. Actually, a lot of bands in math rock don't use switchers. I think actually the ES8 was the thing that introduced switching systems to math rock because you think Nick Reinhardt doesn't use switchers. And sort of, you know, and So Much From Afar don't use switches. If Matt, you think back to when the ES8 first came out, and we did that video series with a handful of math rock bands,
yeah,
at that studio, that I think anyone who did have a switcher had only just introduced the switching systems.
Yeah,
is that because in general, the switching systems are there to kind of make life a bit easier and make it simple for people to change sounds from sounds that they are used to other sounds that they are used to. Whereas in with the sort of music scene that you're into, where bands are more into kind of experimentation and like messing around and improvising, you want to be able to do stuff on the fly. So you want to be able to get down on the floor and quickly mess around with some delay pedals and stuff like that, and then be able to turn it off so that you can carry on with the song. Is that why there's fewer switches are used?
I think that's exactly what it is. It's certainly when sort of talking to and so watching from afar about it, that is certainly how they very much felt about it. They weren't, you know, when I was suggesting they should use switches, they were very unsure about making the move onto something that would mean they had set sounds from their board rather than just tapping whatever and finding something new randomly. And I think, you know, that sort of tap dancing element of performing is very much a part of a lot of math rock bands. And so they're kind of used to that, you know, that's just part and parcel of what you do. In fact, in many senses, me and Tim in our bands are unique in using a switcher system. Of course, I only use one because I like to prance around the stage. And realistically, I only turn drive on and off, so it's moderately redundant for me. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting that that I think maybe there's this. I think bands now, newer bands, switching systems are the standard. But I think if you're just slightly older and into weird music, then they really are something that you just wouldn't consider. It would be considered, you know, very much counter creative sort of thing. But
a lot of these newfangled solid state amps, you know, It's just exactly. The thing is, though, it's just the same. It's the same argument that people have been having about gear in different generations, just in a slightly different form. You know, it's people from your generation, Joe, saying, "Well, no, you can't." Or people from the generation above saying, "No, you can't use switches," and then people from your generation saying, "No, you can't use." Can't you solid state amps? And then the people in the generation below that are saying, why are you using amps? You know, why don't you just plug into your Helix? It's just like whatever kind of the current, I can't even think of the word, the current, just whatever's popular at the time, you know?
Sure. Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, I think that's probably right. I also think that's probably cyclical. Like, I was talking to a sound engineer at a show we played at Scala in London on Sunday with a Japanese band, Trico, at this all-day event. And I was talking to one of the sound engineers there who was a little bit older, and he was like, we were talking about Kemper profilers, and he was saying, "Oh, you know, I remember when this came around the last time. And, you know, you kids will all be convinced about it for, you know, you will all be blinded by the price tag for the next 10 years. And then one of you will plug in a valve amp again and realize that the Kemper never did come close. It just put a price tag on it that convinced you it did. And you were so you were so into the idea that you could achieve all these things that you didn't stop to see if it did achieve all these things." Which I thought was interesting. And I do think there's absolutely in what we do, there's everything's about the hype at the moment. So, man, I don't know, you know, can you beat just having a load of really good pedals and a really loud valve amp? Is it really worth it?
Joe, so who are you?
Yeah, I know. All right. I change my mind every now and again. Don't get me wrong. I'm actually getting really into, I'm really back into the Helix stuff at the moment. Really enjoying using some of the Helix software to make lots of fun and weird noises. But
do you get to do much of that stuff at work? Do you, when you're, you know, thinking about shooting videos and stuff, do you mess around with the Helix stuff? Before I don't know, has any of this newer tech, so, you know, Helix, Headrush, Kempers, has any of that become beneficial for you whilst shooting videos and talking about gear from like a marketing point of view?
I'm sure it would be to the right sort of person, and certainly we do actually use the Helix a lot for our the way we do our heavier demos, as it were. But to be honest, this isn't a complaint of things like Helix and Kemper and modern things like that. This is how I set up to do a video. I'm sure if I invested more time in working out a streamlined method of recording straight onto a digital platform so I had an excellent sound, then that would probably be a great idea. But every time I've sort of tried it, it's needed some tweaking, and what I've been left with is a digital sound that I can't do anything about.
Yeah.
Whereas if I do what I generally do, which is I mic up we pretty much now either use a Boss Katana for recording, or we use an Orange Rockoverb 50. And I have a Hughes and Kettner red box running in between the cab and the head, and I take an Aston Spirit mic off of the cab, and I take the an amp simulated sound off of the Hughes and Kettner red box, and I either blend them, or more often than not, I just take the sound straight from the Aston Spirit, and it just sounds great. That you get great reverb on those Orange Rockoverbs. They sound brilliant and they drive really well. And because of that, whilst I think a Fender clean tone is unbeatable, and I think Katanas are also one of the most versatile and best sounding super affordable amps, if I need to shoot something in a short space of time where I need a good clean and a good drive sound, having that Rockoverb 50 is very good. So I tend to use that, as it were.
That's really interesting. And I think it's something worth thinking about with regards to what you're doing now. And I hope you don't mind me. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here. But obviously, you've moved house. And one of the things that you've said to us is that, you know, you've moved house and you've moved to... you've got a bit more space and you'll want to set up a proper bit of studio. Perhaps we should talk about that in the Patreon, about what your kind of dream realistic studio space could be for your new house. And, you know, you're kind of starting fresh. You've got all this, you've got way more space than you had in your old place. How can you get the most out of it with regards to shooting videos and using it as a kind of inspirational tool for performing and stuff?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to talk about the setup that I'm planning for the certainly for capturing guitar audio from there, because I have the space and the room and the time to be relatively creative with that, and certainly like have a really comprehensive way of capturing sound as best as possible. I'm sure, you know, there are definitely better ways than just going straight into a cab. I'm a massive fan of all the two note stuff. Do you remember we used to use the Laclean and the cab?
The Torpedo cab.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Absolutely. Quality pieces of kit. Really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely. I love their preamps. I think their preamps are great. I'd really love to set up like a pedal board that was running straight into a power amp utilizing something like the Laclean, because it's a fantastic sounding preamp.
Laclean straight into a Marshall 100-100.
Why not?
The classic setup.
The classic super lightweight, reliable Marshall power amp.
That's fine. Just put it into a... Here's what you should do is Laclean for your preamp straight into the Marshall 100-100, and then into one of those. Didn't Hotone or Mur just release? Yeah, the Mur. What's that load box that they released?
They released the Live. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, why not? Sure.
I don't know.
Could that take the... that could probably take that 100-100, couldn't it? I'm sure it'd be fine. Yeah, and then maybe into a headphone amp, and then just plug your headphones in, and then you've got a nice little portable setup.
Yeah. with that, we've been going on some time, and there is a ton of news. So let's dive ahead first into a big barrel of news and see what's going on.
News.
So this week there is so much news. I think we counted like 15 individual items as we draw closer to NAMM.
I can't believe it, because literally just last week we were saying, oh, there's nothing to talk about and there won't be anything to talk about for the next few weeks. And then all of a sudden, when I was prepping all of this, I could every time I went to a new website, there was just more to talk about. It's bonkers.
Yes, there is tons. And first off, one of the market leading affordable amplifier manufacturers, pedal company turned amplifier connoisseurs, Boss, have released something new to the table. Matt Knight, talk to us about your next ones.
Oh, Joe.
That's how you say it, isn't it?
Next Tone. NEX Tone, the Boss Next Tone. Yes, so we've been working on this for a little while. It is the latest evolution of our Tube Logic technology, which first featured in the Blues Cube, and then it's a mixture of that and everything that we've kind of done on the Katana and the Waza. So basically what this is, and what sets this apart from the Katana, the Blues Cube, and anything else we've done, and what a lot of other people have done, is that this is four Class AB power amp circuits in one amplifier.
Now, that is bonkers. Yes. That's totally different. So you've got four different analog amplifiers in one amp. Does it weigh a ton?
No, it's 16 kilos, I think. It's about 30 pounds.
That sounds...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more.
That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Like quite a lot.
Well, I guess
for a head, it's not so bad, is
it's
it?
A combo. No,
I suppose.
If
oh,
for a combo,
the combo.
It's,
right, okay.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Okay.
It's not, it's, I mean, considering that most valve amps, I guess, are £45 to £50, it's probably, it's not too bad. I mean, it's still obviously got some weight to it. It's got a decent speaker in it with a big old magnet. But yeah, so the key thing with this, if you think of Katana, most people know the Katana. The Katana has one Class AB power amp, rather than a lot of things that might, like in the practice amp world, that might have a Class D power amp. Basically means you've got less power, essentially 40 watts, but 40 watts is an actual 40 watts, rather than a Class D power amp that needs to give you 600 watts to give you the same sort of volume. So these match valve-like power, you know, almost like for like. But the Katana is five digital preamps, you know, five preamp models, clean, crunch, lead, and brown, and then one Class AB power amp. Now, where the next tone is different is this four Class AB power amp circuits. Each circuit is not—it's not actually digitally modeling; it's doing it in the analog world, replicating the feel and response and the way the speaker drives for four different valve power amps.
Which
6V6, 6L6, ER84, and EL34.
Now, isn't that something that Yamaha introduced on their THR heads?
Yes, but that was digital.
Right, I see. That was just digital interpretation.
As far as I'm aware, I'm not 100%, but I'm pretty sure that, because someone said, isn't that same thing as the Blackstar TVP? And the TVP, again, I think was digital modeling rather than physically doing it and replicating it in an analog right. world. There are digital elements too. The next time it's not fully analog amplifier.
You've included some effects on there.
Yeah, so what the aim was, to try and make it a lot more classic rather than the Katana that's an all-in-one. So it doesn't do a bunch of high gain. It replicates amps more in their sort of vintage form, I guess. But you've got a delay and a reverb on there. There's an editor that you can download, and then you've got three different types of delay, three different types of reverb, and you can change the delay into a tremolo. So if you want to have a trem reverb combination, you can.
Oh, you can make it a Vox.
Yeah, you can basically make it like a Deluxe or a Vox or a Marshall. But what's really nice, and this is opens up in the custom mode with the editor, is that you can, obviously you've got the power valve selector on the top, but that can also be done electronically. So in the editor, you can set the clean channel up to be a 6L6, really open, really bright, loads of headroom. And then you can set the drive channel up to be an EL34, so much more like a plexi, so a lot more drive, a lot more, you know, mid-range. And because it's actually changing the way the speaker works and how it responds under the fingers, it's like having two separate, complete separate amps in one box. So you can have your clean channel 6L6 with trem and big splashy reverb, and then you can have your EL84 type amp with loads more gain. There's a little tone and boost option in there, but the boost can be a treble boost, a mid boost, or a compressor, which
really?
Is quite nice as well. Yeah, so you can have compression, clean boost, mid boost, or treble boost. And it's got all the in-out features you want on the back. So you can go into two external cabs, effects loop, And then you've got record out, line out, and USB recording as well as USB editing. So it honestly, I absolutely love it, and I have ordered one for myself.
And it's available as a single 12 or a 212.
No,
and
it's again, it's two single 12s, stage and artist. Artist is 80 watts and comes in a slightly bigger cab. It's just that some people might want a more powerful amplifier.
I see. I didn't understand that because I just was immediately drawn to the smaller one.
No, and because you've actually got the, I think, if I remember rightly, there's an 8 and 216, so you can unplug the internal 8 and then use 216s, which is cool. So you, cool. We, my Australian counterpart did a bunch of stuff in the studio with like Brett Kingman and some sort of Australian YouTubers, and they were running into a 412. And when you go into that kind of EL84 plexi type vibe into a 412, it kind of gives you that whole sort of big Marshall stack type thing.
Super cool.
So yeah, that's it's a wicked amp, and I've really loved just sort of trying to match it to the Morgan, that 6L6 sort of big open sort of sparkling clean. And it's not a heavy combo, it's just nice to use. So at home, I think it's absolutely perfect.
And it's also something else that's going to muddy the waters even further for GOTY, Gear of the Year.
Yes.
Where we're only allowed to select one thing per brand.
Per category.
Wait, did any other amps? Oh, yeah, because I guess you had the Katana Artist.
Yes, we had the Katana Artist. And obviously, and I won't go into too much detail about it now. Maybe it's something for a later episode. But we also announced, this is like a pre-NAMM announcement, but we also have done the Waza Tube Amp Expander, which is a tunable reactive load system. So
I don't understand what that is.
So very, very quickly, take, for example, the Ox or the Sur reactive load. So you've got an attenuator, which basically soaks all the power that your power amp is kicking out and then pumps a much lower amount into the speaker. That's like a normal load box. Now, a reactive load system, the load in sight is designed to react, and that's because a speaker sends back signal as well as your amp spitting out to your amp. So when you plug your amp in and you basically, you know, soak the power that's coming out, your amp changes the way it responds. But going into a reactive load, it's like seeing an actual speaker. So a reactive load is designed to be like a 112 or a 212. And that's where most reactive load boxes stop, is that it will be modeled after a greenback or, you know, a particular type of 212. With this, you've got a resonance and a presence reactive load. Each have got four controls, so you can tune your amp to what sort of load you want it to see. So if you're recording at home and you've got a vintage Marshall, plugging into a reactive load that's modeling a 112, you're not going to get the best response out of the amp, because it's like, I've got all this power, but I'm trying to push it through a 112. That's what it sees virtually. So this, you can actually tune your amp into different types of load. So you can have your Morgan amp see a 412, a 212, a 112, a 1x8, a 1x15, or you know, whatever. And it just opens up a lot more options for recording. But on top of that, it's got a 100 watt solid state power amp. So if you've got an old Champ or a Pig Nose or anything where you can disconnect the speaker, you can plug into this and you've got onboard attenuation down to zero, but you've also got 100 watts on
so
board as well.
I can use this to make a 100 watt Pig Nose.
Yeah. Yeah, or what's really cool, which we found when we're doing some testing, is say you've got your favorite, say you've got like a Fender Princeton, for example, and you love the way it sounds up till about, you know, 1 o'clock, and then it right. just breaks up a bit too much and gets a bit too murky. So you want it on the edge of breakup, but it's not quite loud enough to gig with. You can put this in there, and because it sits after the power amp, it's not pushing the amp any harder, it's just making things louder. So you can take an amp at your its favorite sound, its perfect point, and make it giggable, for example.
Okay, so before we did the podcast, Matt sort of explained this, and I zoned out. I didn't care. It was too complicated and sounded like something that was very unnecessary, but that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So now, a Blues Junior is actually a giggable amp.
So yeah, you could take a Blues Junior and go, it sounds great. Well, they sound great non-stop, but I mean, you can take it to a point before it starts to distort, for example, and then use this and go out an extra 100 watts. The second advantage is where it comes in the second stage of the product. You've got an inbuilt compression, delay, and reverb alongside an EQ curve and boost. And you can control all of that via MIDI. So you can take a non-master volume single channel amp and have an onboard boost, an onboard reverb, and an onboard delay that can all fire into the speaker. So imagine if you've got a vintage Marshall Plexi, when you gig it, it's just a bit too dry, you just need a bit of reverb. You can add that in and you can save 10 particular settings and then recall them all via MIDI. So you can basically take vintage amps and make them like totally switchable. Or if you've got a two-channel amp, you can set this to, you know, change channels and have a delay when you switch channel. It's got USB recording out, XLR outs for PA, front of house line level out as well. Plus, you can one feature I thought was wicked is you can mix and match impedances on speakers. And it does it automatically.
What?
Yes. So you can run a four. You could run a two 16s, an 8, and a 16, and it'll automatically. You don't need to tell it what ohm rating the speaker is. You just go out from your amp into that, and then out into whatever speakers you've got. So
wow,
you can mix
that's
and match cats.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
How much are they?
We haven't fully announced the price yet, so I can't say.
God.
It's one thing
you
I can't...
You nearly did, though. You nearly did,
it's
then.
One thing I can't... I've one thing I can't talk about.
Seven, oh, and 70 quid, I think.
You, 70 quid to you if you... I'll just
pounds.
Knock them off the back of a van.
Yeah, yeah. 70 quid.
But
that sounds amazing. That sounds super exciting. I thought this was going to be dull.
No,
and also you did say you were going to. You've spoken about this more than you spoke about the next ones.
Yeah, I actually, well, because I love the next. I love the next tone, and I think it's a wicked combo. But the Tube Amp Expander, like, literally, is a great companion to something like my Morgan amp that's single channel. You know, because you can add an effects loop, you can add a boost. I can use it for recording, and you can record over USB, which I think is wicked. So you can use this as a reactive load system, have no volume coming from out of your amp whatsoever. You don't even need an interface. That is your interface.
Yeah, that is very
and
cool.
And go straight into
that's
that.
Cool.
And then if you want, you can go straight into headphones and just hear it all through headphones.
That is absolutely amazing.
So you've got Bluetooth, mate.
No, man, oh, took rubbish off, mate.
Now,
sorry.
When
can't use my AirPods. Rubbish.
when new effects pedals come out at the moment, the ones that people get the most excited about are reverbs with really expensive price tags, because everyone. Well, it's true. It's like the new thing. It's the most exciting pedals that come out every year are always like. The most soundscapey reverb, and throwing their hat, well, once again, into that ring are Chase Bliss with their new Dark World dual channel reverb, which has literally been everywhere over the internet over the last
day.
Well,
it got announced today.
Oh, did it?
Well, officially,
oh, really?
I think the official announcement was today. It did get leaked a few days ago. They've been teasing it for about a week. Unfortunately, a fairly well-known Instagram account, I think, posted it a little bit too early.
Oh, no, really?
So,
that wasn't us.
No, it wasn't us. Don't worry.
I didn't know about it. They were gloating about knowing what it was on the Gear Slam when I was listening to that this week. And yeah. I was like, yeah, well, I didn't want to know.
I like to
wait until things have been announced before
I pretend. You're a non-trailer man,
them.
Aren't you?
Pardon me?
You're a non-trailer kind of guy.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I don't even... it's only recently that I've started watching trailers for movies, because generally, you just find out too much stuff. Like, I already know if I'm going to... I already knew that I was going to go and watch Jurassic World. I didn't want to watch a trailer. I didn't want to find out that they'd fall in a hamster ball.
Yeah. What about Detective Pikachu starring Ryan Reynolds as
Pikachu? I tell you what, I actually did watch the trailer for that, and it looks really good.
Oh, God.
It looks really good.
I spent the entire of that trailer wondering if I was watching some sort of spoof, like... Saturday Night Live thing.
So they just released a new Pokemon game called Pokemon Let's Go, I think is what it's called. And I thought that it was all just like an elaborate trailer for that. But it does actually appear to be a real movie that they've made. And the thing that I like about it is, whereas most of the, and we shouldn't really be talking about Detective Pikachu on the Guitar Nerds podcast, but the thing that I like about what they've done with this is they've not just made it an origin story. It's not just, oh, here's the story of Pokemon. It's just, listen, anyone who's going to watch this movie knows what Pokemon is, and so here is just a story that happens in this world that you either understand or you don't. It looks like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. That's what it looks like.
Yeah,
which is also a great film. Guitar Nerds bringing
you
Pokemon and guitar information. Also, I like that we started the news saying we've got more news than we've ever had before, and somehow this week we've managed to segue into talking about Pikachu. Well, anyway, the Chase Bliss Dark World, it comes with a ton of those little mini dippy switchy things on the end. I know they all do. They always do. They're a wonderful additional feature. I have no idea what any of them do.
So this offering is different to every other Chase Bliss pedal in the sense that this is fully digital. So obviously Chase Bliss's thing has been analog heart, digital brain.
No, the other way around. Digital brain.
Digital heart. Digital heart.
No, digital brain.
Analog brain.
Digital brain, analog heart.
I thought that's what I said.
No, digital you said digital heart, analog brain.
Oh God,
analog brain.
Digital anyway, Joe.
Wait, wouldn't analog you want a digital Matt. Brain and analog heart?
Yeah, anyway. Analog heart. Because Anyway, you're right. Anyway,
digital. So this one is Digital World Dark Heart. Basically, it is a dual digital reverb. One side is designed by Cooper FX, and one design is a collaborative design with Robert Keeley. So the Cooper FX side is the dark side, and that is based on their generation of the moon. Yes,
yeah,
it's based on their generation loss and outward designs. And then the Keeley side is based on the what they call the world channel, which is a really nice hall plate and spring algorithm. And you can combine those and route them in 33 different ways.
33 different ways. How do you even choose? How do you choose?
You don't.
What
you just press
you
the random button. There isn't a random button. But on the face of it, relatively simple. It's where the dip switches and everything else come into it, which is... And obviously, if you start using MIDI and stuff like that, it really starts opening up a lot more. It sounds wicked. I've watched a few of the demos. I need to dig into it a little bit more because from what I've heard, I'm like, I haven't heard it do anything wacky. I haven't watched the Knobs video yet.
You have to watch the Knobs. The thing is that Knobs, as brilliant as their videos are, tend to make every pedal sound the same in that they make it sound the way Knobs make pedals sound.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is all this weird ambient ethereal stuff. And it does that incredibly well. But I sometimes find it difficult with their videos to differentiate from pedals. It's like, that pedal can also do that sound that Knobs always make their pedals do.
Yeah. I think what's nice about this, actually, I must admit, even though it is expensive, it's around the same sort of price as the Brothers, the Condor, and the Warped Vinyl. It's not the same sort of price.
$350 USD, isn't it?
Yes, but it's not the same price as the Therme or the Total Recall.
Which are like
Tonal Recall,
$500,
bucks.
Right? Yeah, it's a lot.
So, this is really interesting.
Interesting that... that they've hooked up with two other pedal, because what it looks like there is they've got two companies to come up with a pedal and then they've put it in one of their boxes.
Well, I remember this similar conversation came up with have I forgotten his name? I've gone totally blank. But when
Ben Affleck?
When I was talking to Ben Affleck about pedals, he was like, I love pedals. When we were talking to Earthquaker, and he was like, I don't write
Jamie
code.
Jamie Stillman,
that's it. And the same thing when I was talking to Josh Scott from JHS, is these guys don't write code. They're like analog builders, if you were.
Yeah.
But Keeley is known for being a really good coder, and he can write really good DSP code. And again, if you can't write code, you don't know how to do it. It's very, very difficult to go out there and do it. Actually, I think Jamie Stillman did end up coding some of the later Earthquake stuff, but you tend to find that a lot of digital pedals that come out in the boutique world tend to be co-designed with someone else. And quite often, actually, Keeley does get involved in a lot of
that. Yeah, totally. Yeah, he's done quite...
He's prolific.
Yeah.
So I think it's nice because obviously they've gone out and said, look, we can't code. I'm assuming we can't code. How about we design two separate things, but we'll do the Chase Bliss thing to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, build in all the switching and everything like that as well. So really interesting. Cool. I'd like to give all of the pedals a proper go because I've only ever really seen the videos. They're not an easy thing to get hold of in the UK. They tend to be sold out instantly. And like I said, to buy them, some of them are very, very expensive.
Yes, absolutely.
The last show that I put on was for this band, for a couple of fellas, this guy Jeff Rosenstock, who is quite a prolific in the pop punk world over the last few years. And he was on tour with this guy, Chris Farron, who has played in a bunch of bands over the years, but now just does stuff under his own name. And he had a Therme, and he said it was... we were talking about it, and he just said he'd never spent anything like that sort of money on a pedal before. But the first time he heard it, he knew he had to have it, and it became like a core part of his sound. And he wouldn't be able to do what he was doing without it anymore. So it was really, really interesting to see that pedal in that setting. I wouldn't have expected it at all, but it sounded fantastic. So yeah, I've also never had a chance to sit down with any of the Chase Bliss stuff, so we do need to try and track them down, really.
Yeah, I think
absolutely.
So
absolutely. Two new signature guitars have landed this week by two very different players. One, Reeves Gabrel. What is his name?
Reeves Gabrels, I think.
Gabrels, that's it. Yeah. Reeves Gabrels, the Cure's guitarist, who has got a new version of his Reverend. Now, we spoke about this a little while ago when I went to see The Cure and I was talking about the Reverend that he was playing. Well, he's had a new version of that released. And ESP LTD James Hetfield has got a new signature Snakebite with a difference.
Yeah, so just to touch on the Reverend real quick, it is... Now, where is it? The proper name of it is the RG Sus, which means it's got a Sustainiac in it, which is really cool.
Oh,
so
yes.
Sustainiac in the neck. And as far as I can tell, it's a new signature Railhammer pickup for Reeves Gabrels. I'm not 100%, but
I think so.
I had a quick look on his old guitar, and that looked like it was just a standard Railhammer, and I think this is a signature one, which kind of makes sense because you probably want something. I don't think they've done anything with the Sustainiac before, Reverend, so they would probably need to have tweaked the pickup to take the Sustainiac in that way.
We'll explain the pickup a little bit. So the bottom humbucker, the E, A, and D strings are a rail, and then the G, B, and E strings are pole pieces. I think it
massive
looks wicked.
Oversized.
Yeah, massive
sort of
oversized pole pieces.
Size pole pieces.
Really nice trem system on it. Is it a Wilkinson one, or is it something similar to or a Hipshot one? I can't remember.
I'm not sure. It's very reminiscent of sort of Music Man style.
Yeah.
Trem
system. You know it's going to stay in tune, basically. Volume, yeah. Their bass contour control, and then you've got two little dip switches to control the Sustainiac. And yeah. I've always wanted the guitar with a Sustainiac. Maybe this could be
eventually. Super cool. Comes in a very, very tasteful silver frieze, which is kind of a metallic grey, and a very dark, by the pictures of it, very dark Powell Ferro board on the guitar.
And then
on the guitar.
Standard Reverend roasted maple neck, Carina body, bass contour control, locking tuners. Absolutely wicked. I think this guitar looks, in terms of a versatile instrument. I mean, I wouldn't look at that and go, I'm going to sound like The Cure playing that. Do you know what I mean? You look at some signature, you're like, maybe.
Well, speaking of versatility, yeah. We should talk about the James Hetfield. So he's obviously James Hetfield's had signature snake bites out for some time. And listener, you may well be a fan of this sort of weird sort of shark bitten flying K sort of thing.
Explorer-ish.
Yeah.
Looking at the spec on this. So this is an SE baritone collaboration with James Hetfield, which they've limited to 500 pieces. And it just made me think, just a random thought about how many guitars do Metallica own? Because I'm sure Metallica is a business. I'm sure they run it as a business.
Oh, 100%. So
in a lockup somewhere, there must just be hundreds, if not thousands, of guitars.
Yeah.
Surely. And I just think that is just bonkers.
Well, Kirk Hammett is a big guitar nerd anyway himself, isn't he? Because he bought the Gary Moore Les Paul. So yeah. you've got to be some fanatic to be willing to drop however much money that was. Yeah. I mean, the legend was that Gary Moore sold it for $2 million. Now, whether that's true or not is you know, up for debate. But if it is true, I can't imagine that Kirk Hammett bought it for much less than that. Yeah. So, I think you're right, Matt. There must just be a lockup somewhere in California. Hopefully, watertight and earthquake proof. Living on the fault line that they do in California. This looks really interesting. I mean, it's a 27-inch scale and it's a baritone, which I don't think is anything that he's had before. I don't think he's had.
I know, but
he's certainly the standard Snakebite is a standard scale length guitar, so it's different in that sense.
Yeah,
ebony board. He has stuck with his traditional because he has his own signature Het EMG active humbuckers. He has stuck with that, and active humbuckers really aren't the flavor of the day on metal guitars. Like a guitar that we're not going to talk about, but. Well, I guess we are, but we're not going into detail. It's Cort just released a new 7-string baritone.
Yeah.
And they opted for those new... What are the passive EMGs called? Do you guys remember?
I can't remember.
They are called retroactives.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which are, you know, the high output pickups that are supposed to sound far more... traditional in that sort of sense, and that really seems to be the call of the day. And of course, as we've mentioned before, like with Ola England stuff all being passive, so many more metal players are moving towards passive pickups. So
sure, but if you're James Hetfield and you get a choice of what pickups you're going to put in your guitar, are you going to put in something sort of modern sounding, or are you going to put in the signature pickups that you've got from another company where you'll get a little bit of a bubble for selling those ones?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, do you know what I mean? And also, Hetfield's got those pickups because that's the sound that he likes, and that's the sound that he uses. And that's, you know, what they've been doing for the last 30 years or however long they've been a band. But it looks cool. It looks interesting. I can't imagine we'll ever see any of these hit the shops. I'm sure they've probably already sold out.
But a
cool and interesting, something different from Hetfield. At least, you know, it's something relatively affordable, I would have thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we are running out of time here on the Guitar Nerds podcast, so I think maybe one of you two can pick one more news article and we'll discuss that briefly. But whilst you're thinking about what you're going to pick, I can't finish this podcast without mentioning that Island Instruments have unveiled a new Traveller bass.
Are you really jumping on this over all the other cool news?
Is a single cut 31 inch scale Traveller bass, which is short enough to go in your overhead, and at a very reasonable sum of $2,500 US. this Montreal, Canada built incredible instrument is absolutely worth a look. It looks absolutely bonkers, built with reclaimed spruce and finished in what is described as milk paint in a sort of transparent natural finish. This is absolutely one of the coolest Traveller basses I have ever seen, and I will be checking it out further.
Can I make a suggestion, because there was so much news? Is it worth us maybe just reading down the list of everything that came out this week, so people can kind of go out there and catch up on it, and then
yeah, absolutely, and I'll pop it in the podcast notes as well.
Because I'm just looking at it, I'm like, I can't really pick
the thing.
Well, go on.
The thing for me there that I am and I realize that this is me showing just how boring I am. But the thing out of all of these things that I'm really excited about is the MXR Isobrick Mini.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that.
It looks fantastic. So
accessory-driven J-Cross.
Mate, I love it. Always I absolutely about love those. It. So it's a really cool, small Isobrick. I've always been a big fan of the MXR Isobricks. I thought they were when they stepped from the DC brick to the Isobrick, you know, a handful of years ago, I thought it was a really smart move. This is great, and it's exactly aimed at people like us and people who listen to this podcast. Five outputs, four 300 milliamp 9-volt outputs, so that will easily power the Strifector and one other Strymon pedal if you've got the Deco as well, because you probably do, and then also one other output that can be switched between 9 or 18 volts and will power up to 800 milliamps. 800
I thought you were
going to
say 800 pedals then. I was like,
800 whoa. Pedals. daisy chained off of one isolated output. Yeah, that's right. but no, I think this, and it's really small. It's about, they describe it as the same size as a candy bar.
Well,
so.
I absolutely have to agree with you, Jay. I'm completely converted. I switched up, got rid of my Voodoo Labs recently, my Pedal Power 2, and switched over to a standard Isobrick, which for a start brought, like, halved the weight of my board. but also, unlike the Pedal Power 2, which is a fantastic power supply, if not a little bit old school, powers everything on my board, meaning that I'm now just a one plug guy. And having just been on my first sort of tour with the Isobrick fitted,
don't put yourself down. You're more than a one plug boy to us.
Thanks, man. But yeah, they're brilliant. They're the right size for modern pedal boards, and you know, they're super convenient, and the amount of power they produce is impressive.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. If I had to pick one thing, and I know one of the podcast listeners asked about this, and I would like to talk about it in more depth at some point, because I think it's a wicked unit. Maybe it will come up in the gear of year. It was the...
unfortunately named.
Yeah, Drybell, Unit 67. So this is a 1176 style compressor, a Rangemaster treble boost, and some sort of EQ system all built into one. And it's basically, on the face of it, seems like the best make gooder pedal you can get, because it's got three awesome bits of make gooder equipment in it: a boost, a compressor, and an EQ. That you can all use. You can use them independently, you can turn the other bits on, or you can run them all at the same time. So it's kind of like a fully analog system that can sit on your pedal board and just work for a multitude of different rays. So I actually really, really want to try one of these. It's just, I don't think there's any dealers in the UK. I think you have to buy them direct from the company.
You would be incorrect. I certainly know a dealer of Drybell Effect.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Do you now? Oh, well, maybe we need to talk.
Yeah.
And I think...
GAC sell them.
GAC sell them, do they?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay, there you go. And I think you're totally missing the most important point of this pedal, Matt, is look at the size of that knob. That is a huge knob.
You're saying this Drybell unit has got a massive knob on it?
that does appear to be what I'm saying, yeah. But it's actually, I don't think I'm misleaded here. It looks like it's a kind of a chicken head knob on a big...
it's a chicken head knob.
Yeah, sorry to keep this going, but I don't think I've seen a knob that size in that shape.
It's difficult to gauge the size of the pedal. But yes, certainly, Drybell.
I mean, you've got the switch there for
effect.
Reference.
Suppose so. Yeah, it does look oversized. You're right. But you know, Drybell do make fantastic effects. We really enjoyed the chorus vibrato, the vibe machine
that me and Matt
checked out and did a little video on a couple of years ago. But yes, straight out of Krapina in Croatia, Drybell certainly do make some absolutely fantastic effects. Now, that is it for us here on the regular podcast, but we will be continuing over on the Patreon episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, where from as little as $1 a month, You can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. 1 month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you an extra half an hour every week, plus access to all the bonus features and mini-series. And $10 a month makes you one of our executive backers, which grants you access to everything already mentioned, plus the prestigious honor of having your name read out in one breath by me. Are you ready, boys? This could be the day that breaks me.
Absolutely. Have you got the list? Have you got the full list?
Yeah, I'm so tore tired.
Do you definitely have the full list?
Yes. I've got the full list.
If anybody isn't
it's the full list.
Okay.
It's going to be good. I've been drinking solidly for 5 days. I don't know if I can do this.
I think...
if I have the lung capacity.
I also don't think you can do it. I've got to be honest.
All right, here we go. We're going.
Joe, just before you get going.
Yes. Yes, Jay.
No, nothing. I just thought that'd be funny.
Okay, wonderful.
Adrian Day, Ethan Jebediah Martyr, Ken Sayer, Matthew King, Stephen Conrady, Golden G, Rashad III, Marin Peters, Sean Arvo, Christopher Fletcher-Pitson, Robert Cousins, Rob Cruz, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Amadon, Ernie Cooper, Nate Nagel, Ross Edwards, Christoph Francis, Robbie Cottergrant, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Emery James Baker, Ryan McDermott, Ron Joyous, Blake Wyland, Aaron Sherman, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christoph Lucent, Robin Smith, Anne Zimes, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Rob Nordwick, Steve Markle, Mark Cross, Carlos Mata, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Blair Toms, Laurie Ansis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Moo Gromit, Royal Thompson, Colin Anderson.
Oh, Joe, I would say that's on the verge of a failure.
I got it. It was by the skin of my teeth. So it looks like we are maybe one or two extra Patreon, top tier Patreon backers away from hearing a man pass out.
Please,
on air.
Friends, if you're listening to this and you're not a top tier backer, please be the reason, be the straw that breaks the camel's back. Please make it so that Joe collapses and cannot do this podcast anymore. You will be making mine and Matt's life much happier.
Can finally break free.
Yeah, that's right.
Fantastic. Wonderful. Well, yes, there you have it. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds, or on YouTube at Guitar Nerds Videos. You can even visit our website, guitarnerds.net, where all our various channels are displayed in all of their glory. And you can even purchase Guitar Nerds merchandise and become a true member of the club. That's it from us for this week. We'll catch you next time for some more guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.